Chapter 27. MB Janey reminded Sean of Tinker working a bird. He had the same half-crouched gait and the same air of complete absorption. The white men sat their horses in silence, watching him. The sun was well up already, and Sean unbuttoned his sheepskin coat and pulled it off. He strapped it onto the blanket roll behind him. MB Janey had moved out about 50 yards from them, and now he was working slowly back towards them. He stopped and minutely inspected a wet pat of cow dung.
"Herdy kaffir, verstan wat high ground," opined Steph Erasmus approvingly,
but no one else spoke. Bester Klein fidgeted with the hammer of his carbine. His red face was already sweating in the rising heat. MB Janey had proved right. They were in hilly country. Not the smoothly rounded hills of Natal, but hills with rocky crests, deeply gullied and ravined between. There were thorn forest, and euphorbia covered the sides of the hills with a latticework of reptile grey trunks, and the grass was coarse and tall.
"I could use a drink," said Fricky Van Essen,
and wiped his knuckles across his lips.
"Cheep-eep, cheep-eep,"
a barbette called stridently in the branches of the kaffir boom tree under which they waited. Sean looked up. The bird was brown and red among the scarlet flowers which covered the tree.
"How many?"
asked Steph, and MB Janey came to stand at his horse's head.
50, no more, he answered.
"When?"
"Yesterday. After the heat of the day, they moved slowly down the valley. They were grazing. They cannot be more than half an hour's ride ahead of us."
Steph nodded. 50 head only, but there would be more.
"How many men with them?"
MB Janey clucked his tongue disgustedly.
2 unfems.
He pointed with his spear at a dusty place where the print of a half-grown boy's bare foot showed clearly.
"There were no men."
"Good," said Steph.
"Follow them. They told us that if we found anything, we should go back and report,"
protested Bester Klein quickly.
"They said we shouldn't start anything on our own."
Steph turned in his saddle.
"Are you afraid of 2 unfens?"
he asked coldly.
"I'm not afraid of anything. It's just what they told us."
Klein flushed redder in his already red face.
"I know what they told us, thank you," said Steph. "I'm not going to start anything. We're just going to have a look." "I know you," burst out Klein. "If you see cattle, you'll go mad for them. All of you, you're greedy for cattle, like some men are for drink. Once you see them, you won't stop."
Klein was a railway ganger. Steph turned away from him.
"Come on, let's go."
They rode out of the shade of the kaffir boom tree into the sunlight, Klein muttering softly to himself, and MB Janey leading them down the valley. The floor of the valley sloped gradually, and on each side of them the ground rose steep and rocky. They travelled quickly, with MB Janey and the other non-gai thrown out as a screen, and the horsemen cantering in a line with their stirrups almost touching. Sean levered open the breech of his rifle and drew out the cartridge. He changed it for another from the bandolier across his chest.
50 head is only 10 apiece, complained Fricky.
That's 100 quid, as much as you earn in 6 months.
Sean laughed with excitement, and Fricky laughed with him.
You too! Keep your mouth shut and your eyes open.
Steph's voice was phlegmatic, but he couldn't stop the excitement from sparkling in his eyes.
I knew you were going to raid, sulked Klein. I knew it, sure as fate. "You shut up also," said Steph, and grinned at Sean.
They rode for 10 minutes. Then Steph called softly to the Nongai, and the patrol halted. No one spoke, and every man stood with his head alert and his ears straining.
"Nothing," said Steph at last. "How close are we?"
"Very close," Embijani answered. "We should have heard them from here."
Embijani's exquisitely muscled body was shiny with sweat, and the pride of his stance set him apart from the other Nongai. There was a restrained eagerness about him, for the excitement was infectious.
"All right, follow them," said Steph.
Embijani settled the rawhide shield securely on his shoulder and started forward again. Twice more they stopped to listen, and each time Sean and Fricky were more restless and impatient.
"Sit still," snapped Steph. "How can we hear anything with you moving about?"
Sean opened his mouth, but before he could answer, they all heard an ox low mournfully ahead of them among the trees.
"That's it. We got them. Come on."
"No, wait," Steph ordered. "Sean, take my far-lookers and climb up that tree. Tell me what you can see."
"We're wasting time," argued Sean. We should learn to do what we're damn well told," said Steph. "Get up that tree."
With the binoculars slung around his neck, Sean clambered upwards until he sat high in a crotch of two branches. He reached out and broke off a twig, which obscured his vision, then exclaimed immediately,
"There they are, right ahead of us."
"How many?"
Steph called up to him.
"Small herd. Two herd boys with them."
"Are they among the trees?"
"No," said Sean. "They're in the open. Looks like a patch of swamp."
"Make sure there aren't any other Zulus with them."
"No,"
Sean started to answer, but Steph cut him short.
"Use the glasses, damn it. They'll be hiding if they're there."
Sean brought up the glasses and focused them. The cattle were fat and sleek-skinned, big-horned, and bodies dappled black on white. A cloud of white tick birds hovered over them. The two herd boys were completely naked, youngsters with the thin legs and disproportionately large genitals of the Africans. Sean turned the glasses slowly back and forth, searching the patch of swamp and the surrounding bush. At last he lowered them.
"Only the two herd boys," he said.
"Come down then,"
Steph told him. The herd boys fled as soon as the patrol rode out into the open. They disappeared among the fever trees on the far side of the swamp.
"Let them go," laughed Steph. "The poor little buggers are going to be in enough trouble as it is."
He spurred his horse forward into the vivid green patch of swamp grass. It was lush, thick and tall enough to reach his saddle. The others followed him in, with the mud squelching and sucking at the hooves of the horses. They could see the backs of the cattle showing above the grass 100 yards ahead of them. The tick birds circled, squawking.
"Sean, you and Fricky cut round to the left."
Steph spoke over his shoulder, and before he could finish, the grass around them was full of Zulus, at least 100 of them, in full war dress.
"Ambush!" yelled Steph. "Don't try and fight. Too many of them. Get out!"
And they dragged him off his horse. Horses panicked in the mud, whinnying as they reared. The bang of Klein's rifle was almost drowned in the triumphant roar of the warriors. Embijani jumped to catch the bridle of Sean's horse. He dragged its head around.
"Ride, Nkosi. Quickly. Do not wait."
Klein was dead, an assegai in his throat, and the blood bursting brightly from the corners of his mouth as he fell backwards. "Hold on to my stirrup leather." Sean felt surprisingly calm. A Zulu came at him from the side. Sean held his rifle across his lap and fired with the muzzle almost in the man's face. It cut the top off his head. Sean ejected the cartridge case and reloaded. "Ride, Nkosi!" Embijani shouted again. He had made no effort to obey Sean. His shield held high, he barged into two of the attackers and knocked them down into the mud. His assegai rose and fell, rose and fell.
"Engidila!" howled Embijani. "I have eaten!"
Fighting madness on him, he jumped over the bodies and charged. A man stood to meet him, and Embijani hooked the edge of his shield under his and jerked it aside, exposing the man's left flank to his blade.
"Engidila!"
Embijani howled again. He had torn an opening in the ring of attackers, and Sean rode for it, his horse churning heavily through the mud. A Zulu caught at his reins, and Sean fired with his muzzle touching the man's chest. The Zulu screamed.
"Embijani!" shouted Sean. "Take my stirrup!"
Frikkie Van Essen was finished. His horse was down, and Zulus swarmed over him with red spears. Leaning out of the saddle, Sean circled Embijani's waist with his arm and plucked him out of the mud. He struggled wildly, but Sean held him. The ground firmed under his horse's hooves. They were moving faster. Another Zulu stood in their way, with his assegai ready. With Embijani kicking indignantly under one arm and his empty rifle in his other hand, Sean was helpless to defend himself. He shouted an obscenity at the Zulu as he rode down on him. The Zulu dodged to one side and darted in again. Sean felt the sting of the blade across his shin, and then the shock as it went on into his horse's chest. They were through, out of the swamp and into the trees. Sean's horse carried him another mile before it fell. The assegai had gone in deep. It fell heavily, but Sean was able to kick his feet out of the irons and jump clear. He and Embijani stood, looking down at the carcass. Both of them were panting.
"Can you run in those boots?" asked Embijani urgently.
"Yes." They were light, velt showing.
"Those breeches will hold your legs."
Embijani knelt swiftly and with his assegai cut away the cloth until Sean's legs were bare from the thighs down. He stood up again and listened for the first sounds of pursuit. Nothing.
"Leave your rifle. It's too heavy. Leave your hat and your bandolier."
"I must take my rifle," protested Sean.
"Take it then," Embijani flashed impatiently. "Take it and die. If you carry that, they'll catch you before noon."
Sean hesitated a second longer. Then he changed his grip, holding the rifle by the barrel like an axe. He swung it against the trunk of the nearest tree. The butt shattered, and he threw it from him.
"Now we must go," said Embijani.
Sean glanced quickly across at his dead horse. The leather thongs held his sheepskin coat onto the saddle. "All Anna's hard work wasted," he thought wryly. Then, following Embijani, he started to run. The first hour was bad. Sean had difficulty matching his step to that of Embijani. He ran with his body tensed and soon had a stabbing stitch in his side. Embijani saw his pain, and they stopped for a few minutes while Embijani showed him how to relax it away. Then they went on, with Sean running smoothly. Another hour went by, and Sean had found his second wind.
"How long will it take us to get back to the main army?" grunted Sean. 2 days, perhaps. "Don't talk," answered Embijani.
The land changed slowly about them as they ran. The hills not so steep and jagged. The forest thinned, and again they were into the rolling grassland.
It seems we are not being followed.
It was half an hour since Sean had last spoken.
Perhaps.
Ember Janey was noncommittal.
It is too soon yet to tell.
They ran on, side by side, in step, so their feet slapped in unison on the hard-baked earth.
"Christ, I'm thirsty," said Sean.
"No water," said Ember Janey, "but we'll stop to rest a while at the top of the next rise."
They looked back from the crest. Sean's shirt was soaked with sweat, and he was breathing heavily but easily.
"No one's following us." Sean's voice was relieved. "We can slow down a bit now."
Ember Janey didn't answer. He also was sweating heavily, but the way he moved and held his head showed he was not yet beginning to tire. He carried his shield on his shoulder, and the blade of the assegai in his other hand was caked with black, dry blood. He stared out along the way they had come for fully 5 minutes before he growled angrily and pointed with his assegai.
"There, close to that clump of trees. Can you see them?"
"Oh, hell!"
Sean saw them. About 4 miles behind, on the edge of the forest where it thinned out, a black pencil line drawn on the brown parchment of grassland. But the line was moving.
"How many of them?" asked Sean.
50, hazarded Ember Janey. "Too many." "I wish I'd brought my rifle," muttered Sean. "If you had, they'd be much closer now. And one gun against 50.
Ember Janey left it unfinished.
"All right, let's get going again," said Sean.
"We must rest a little longer. This is the last time we can stop before nightfall."
Their breathing had slowed. Sean took stock of himself. He was aching a little in the legs, but it would be hours yet before he was really tired. He hawked a gob of the thick, gummy saliva out of his throat and spat it into the grass. He wanted a drink, but knew that that would be fatal folly.
"Ah!" exclaimed Ember Janey. "They have seen us."
"How do you know?" asked Sean.
"Look! They're sending out their chasers."
From the head of the line, a trio of specks had detached themselves and were drawing ahead.
"What do you mean?"
Sean scratched the side of his nose uneasily. For the first time, he was feeling the fear of the hunted, vulnerable, unarmed, with the pack closing in.
"They're sending out their best runners ahead to force us beyond our strength.
They know that if they push us hard enough, even though they break their own wind while they do it, we will fall easily to the others that follow."
"Good God!"
Sean was now truly alarmed.
"What are we going to do about it?"
"For every trick, there is a trick," said Ember Janey. "But now we have rested enough. Let us go."
Sean took off down the hill like a startled diker, but Ember Janey pulled him up sharply.
"That is what they want. Run as before."
And once again they fell into the steady lope, swinging long-legged and relaxed.
"They're closer," said Sean when they reached the top of the next hill.
Three specks were now well ahead of the others.
"Yes."
Ember Janey's voice was expressionless. They went over the crest and down the other side. The slap, slap, slap of their feet together, and their breathing an unaltering rhythm. Suck, blow, suck, blow. There was a tiny stream in the bottom of the valley, clean water rippling over white sand. Sean jumped it with only a single longing glance, and they started up the far slope. They were just short of the crest when behind them they heard a thin, distant shout. He and Ember Janey looked round. On the top of the hill they had just left, only half a mile away, were the three Zulu runners, and as Sean watched, they plunged down the slope towards him, with their tall feather headdresses bobbing and their leopard-tail kilts swirling about their legs. They had thrown aside their shields, but each man carried an assegai. "Look at their legs," exulted Embijani. Sean saw that they ran with the slack, blundering steps of exhaustion. "They are finished. They have run too hard," Embijani laughed. "Now, we must show them how afraid we are. We must run like the wind, run as though 100 tokoloshi breathe on our necks." It was only 20 paces to the crest of the slope, and they pelted panic-stricken up and over the top. But the instant they were out of sight, Embijani caught Sean's arm and held him. "Get down," he whispered. They sank into the grass, and then crawled back on their stomachs until they lay just below the crest. Embijani held his assegai pointed forward. His legs were gathered up under him, and his lips were drawn back in a half grin. Sean searched in the grass and found a rock the size of an orange. It fitted neatly into his right hand. They heard the Zulus coming, their horny bare feet pounding up the hill, and then their breathing, hoarse, hissing gasps, closer and closer, until suddenly they came up over the crest. Their momentum carried them down to where Sean and Embijani stood up out of the grass to meet them. Their fatigued grey faces crumbled into expressions of complete disbelief. They had expected to find their quarry half a mile ahead of them. Embijani killed one with his assegai. The man did not even lift his arms to parry the thrust. The point came out between his shoulders. Sean hurled the rock into the face of another. It made a sound like a ripe pumpkin dropped on a stone floor. He fell backwards, with his assegai spinning from his hand. The third man turned to run, and Embijani landed heavily on his back, bore him down, and then sat astride his chest, pushed his chin back, and cut his throat. Sean looked down at the man he had hit. He had lost his headdress, and his face had changed shape. His jaw hung lopsided. He was still moving feebly. "I've killed three men today," thought Sean. "And it was so easy." Without emotion, he watched Embijani come across to his victim. Embijani stooped over him, and the man made a small gasping sound, then lay still. Embijani straightened up and looked at Sean. "Now they cannot catch us before dark. And only a night ape can see in the dark," said Sean. Remembering the joke, Embijani smiled. The smile made his face younger. He picked up a bunch of dry grass and wiped his hands on it. The night came only just in time to save them. Sean had run all day, and at last his body was stiffening in protest. His breathing wheezed painfully, and he had no moisture left to sweat with. "A little longer, just a little longer," Embijani whispered encouragement beside him. The pack was spread out, the stronger runners pressing a scant mile behind them, and the others dwindling back into the distance. "The sun is going. Soon you can rest." Embijani reached out and touched his shoulder. Strangely, Sean drew strength from that brief physical contact. His legs steadied slightly, and he stumbled less frequently as they went down the next slope. Swollen and red, the sun lowered itself below the land, and the valleys were full of shadow. "Soon now, very soon." Embijani's voice was almost crooning. He looked back. The figures of the nearest Zulu were indistinct. Sean's ankle twisted under him, and he fell heavily. He felt the earth graze the skin from his cheek, and he lay on his chest with his head down.
Get up.
Ember Janey's voice was desperate. Sean vomited painfully, a cupful of bitter bile.
Get up.
Ember Janey's hands were on him, dragging him to his knees. Stand up or die here, threatened Ember Janey. He took a handful of Sean's hair and twisted it mercilessly. Tears of pain ran into Sean's eyes, and he swore and lashed out at Ember Janey.
Get up,
goaded Ember Janey, and Sean heaved to his feet.
Run, said Ember Janey, half pushing him, and Sean's legs began to move mechanically under him.
Ember Janey looked back once more. The nearest Zulu was very close, but almost merged into the fading twilight. They ran on, Ember Janey steadying Sean when he staggered, Sean grunting in his throat with every step, his mouth hanging open, sucking air across a swollen tongue. Then, quickly, in the sudden African transition from day to night, all colour was gone from the land, and the darkness shut down in a close circle about them. Ember Janey's eyes flicked restlessly back and forth, picking up shapes in the gloom, judging the intensity of the light, Sean reeling, unseeing beside him.
We will try now, decided Ember Janey aloud.
He checked Sean's run and turned him right at an acute angle to their original track. Now they were heading back towards the hunters at a tangent that would take them close past them, but out of sight in the darkness. They slowed to a walk, Ember Janey holding Sean's arm across his shoulders to steady him, carrying his assegai ready in his other hand. Sean walked dully, his head hanging. They heard the leading pursuers passing 50 paces away in the darkness, and a voice called in Zulu,
"Can you see them?"
"Aibo!"
"Negative," answered another.
"Spread out! They may try to turn in the dark."
"Yebo!"
"Affirmative." Then the voices were passed, and silence and night closed about them once more. Ember Janey made Sean keep walking. A little bit of moon came up and gave them light, and they kept going with Ember Janey gradually working back onto a course towards the southeast. They came to a stream at last, with trees along its bank. Sean drank with difficulty, for his throat was swollen and sore. Afterwards they curled together for warmth on the carpet of leaves beneath the trees, and they slept.